Welcome back to the Compass live stream, the only and therefore the best live stream about proof of work mining. We're glad you joined us for another week of live streams. We have two amazing guests on the stream today to talk with us about the hardware market in the Bitcoin mining industry. I guess, yeah, specifically about Bitcoin mining hardware. Vincent from our team at Compass and also another Vincent from What's Miner. Before we let you guys introduce yourselves, though, I want to have a shout out to my co-host, Will. Will, thanks for always being on the show with me. Great to have you back. I'm looking forward to this conversation. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, really excited for this one. I think the ASIC market has just been all over the place this year, and people are always interested in kind of figuring out where the money printers are going next, like up and down. So really excited to see the two Vincents here's take on the market.
Yes, the two Vincents are going to unload a lot of information, insights, and some fun opinions on us this conversation. I want to give you both a chance to introduce yourselves, give us a little background on sort of how you got into the mining industry and your focus on the ASIC markets. Vincent from What's Miner, do you mind just introducing yourself and giving us maybe a brief history of What's Miner and what led up to where you are today?
Yeah, so I should say good morning. So though here it's midnight in China. My name is Vincent. Right now, I'm serving as a sales director in What's Miner. So actually, there is a small story for myself, being in this industry. So before I joined What's Miner, I was working in telecommunication industry. So I worked in ZTE corporation for 14 years. I sold a lot of telecommunication equipment to India. So however, in the year 2018, I just quit the job, my previous job, and by chance, I get joined in What's Miner. And so when I joined What's Miner, so actually the situation of MicroBT What's Miner is not as good as right now we are, because though we released the most efficient miners based on 16 nanometer from TSMC, however, we were not able to get a sufficient supply capacity in the year 2018. And of course, everybody knows that the mining profit in the year 2018 is not so good. So due to these reasons, the situation of What's Miner in the year 2018 is not so not so good. So however, this situation got changed in the year 2019. So myself is really pleased to join work with MicroBT as a sales director, because starting from the year 2019, so we explored more business chances outside of China. So we can say after I joined What's Miner, so our overseas market enhanced a lot. Probably later via the conversation, so we can share more information about What's Miner and myself. But I already in this industry for 3 years. Yeah,
that's really interesting. Yeah, I'm sure in that time I know the market in general has changed a lot, and I'm sure the hardware market has changed a lot too. Vincent, do you mind also giving Vincent from Compass? Do you mind also giving us a quick intro on yourself and where? I know you've been a few different places before Compass. Sort of a brief overview of your journey through the industry before coming to Compass.
Yeah, for sure. So prior to joining the industry, I joined the industry around 2017. I was a mechanical engineer before by trade, and I kind of got introduced because I worked in the oil and gas industry. Gas prices in my location were negative, and so people were just trying to find different ways to monetize it. So I was just kind of doing some very bare bones preliminary research on it, where everybody is doing oil and gas, Bitcoin mining, flared mining, stuff like that. But as a side hustle, I was really interested in just trying to make some extra cash because I was a student. So I realized that in North America, there wasn't too many reputable distributors for mining equipment. And so I tried to take advantage of that and kind of do some hardware procurement through some Chinese sources and then sell it to North American people that didn't really have access to that. And that's kind of how I got started brokering. And since then, it has evolved a lot. I've sold more than 100,000 machines. Obviously, they're like the old S9s, but now we're getting to the new generations and they have a lot, really high price tags. So I've seen the dips, the highs and lows, and it's really interesting to see how far MicroBT has come. Like when I first heard about them, Bitmain and Avalon were the two top suppliers of equipment with the S9s and the 841s and 921s. And you didn't hear too much about WhatsMiner. And you guys did a really good job evolving, especially with the M20 series. I think that's what kickstarted you guys and brought you guys to the limelight, where now you and Bitmain are competing head to head. And then after getting into the industry a little bit, I had a short career at NovaBlock doing business development for a mining pool. And then after that, I joined Compass Mining to lead their sales and procurement.
That's really interesting. I guess, you know, the common crypto story you hear, especially from people who found it in college, is sort of trading the coins themselves in college, not the mining hardware. Definitely a fresh on-ramp into the industry there. I kind of want to kick off the general ASIC market conversation with us today with just like a general question on like an update or like an overview of the current state of the market. Like if you look at price charts for the assets themselves right now, you know, you see a little bit of selling activity over the past couple of days, maybe a little bit of fear, some dicey news coming from different regulators around the world. But if we focus on the hardware market, like if you were to give sort of a concise update on the state of Bitcoin mining hardware right now, what does the market look like? What are some key data points or movers and shakers jostling for leadership positions and whatnot in this slice of the market? What things sort of stand out to you? Vincent from Compass, I'll toss it back to you, and then Vincent from WhatsMiner also.
For sure. I appreciate that. I personally see that I think in July we saw a lot of people had excess inventory, but we slowly see starting to see markets pick back up again, especially with Bitcoin wrapping up, even with that slight dip down to 42K ish. We haven't seen too much selling and too much decreases in hardware. Typically, I spoke about this with on an article with CoinDesk, where the ASICs don't generally go down in value as quickly as they go up in value. And we're starting to see that the a bunch of public companies are making large announcements about picking up machines for Q2, Q3, Q4 of next year. And for me, I think that it's extremely bullish because there's a lot of equipment that is on the secondary markets that these publicly traded companies can't touch. And so that's why it's going to be an interesting little bit. They're basically just purchasing from the manufacturer, when sometimes, specifically in July and August, the secondary market was cheaper than what was on from the manufacturer. And I think that once people realize that and they need to take advantage of all these areas, it's going to change how people procure their ASICs.
That is interesting. We saw a lot of heat on secondary markets there. Vincent from WhatsMiner, same question to you. Like when you look at the ASIC market in general right now, like what's the status of the market? What are key things that you see that stand out to you?
Yeah, ASIC hardware market. So in this year actually changed a lot. So we have to say change a lot. And the first change, so what I can see is actually, you know, this trend happened in since last year, not only this year, but this year, you know, the trend was enhanced. So what I observed is, you know, the capital from North America and Europe. So, you know, they invested huge since the year 2020. So, you know, the big players, they sign agreement, long-term agreement, either with us or with, you know, Bitmain. And you know, the procurement plan and quantity is really huge. And so the trend was changed, even, you know, enhanced this year, because this year, you know, the investors in China, they were not able to put the ASIC miners in China mining further. So though, you know, some small players here, you know, doing mining in China. However, the large data center, all of them are almost closed. And, you know, they regulation and the policies becoming more strict. So the investors from China, they reduce procurement, you know, quantity in big quantity. So we have to say more miners are moving outside of China, and we can see that. So more you know, more miners are actually purchased by the investors outside of China. This is number one. Number two is that right now, you know, the big players, they, you know, prefer purchase the miners, you know, in advance. For example, as Vincent said just now, you know, big players, they even purchase the supply of the miners in the year 2022. Okay, Q2, Q3, Q4, they have, you know, the contract with us or with some other purchasers. So they prefer purchase the miners in, you know, even more than half year earlier than the supply time. And so, however, we are not saying the, you know, the miners in stock are not able to be sold out. So some small and medium investors, they are trying to access to the miners available immediately. And this is not a small portion, okay? So also big quantity can be traded, and also the used miner. So in the month of May and June, so the used miner become really cheap due to the regulations published in China. However, it recovered really fast. Okay, but what I can see is probably from October, November onwards. So if Bitcoin price will not have a significant increase or growth, I think, you know, the price of the miners may drop down. And another point is, so right now we can say the vendors like us, ASIC hardware providers like us, so we will prefer have long-term cooperation with big players and the investors. Okay, so and so you can see that right now the sales policy from ASIC provider vendors so also change a lot comparing with the few years back. It is totally changed, and slowly it is not becoming, you know, the sales the vendor market. So also it is well balanced right now between the vendor market and the purchaser market. Okay, so these are the observations I can share. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I love those insights. So Damien's actually going to throw up a video here in a second. So this is Los Angeles Bay and Long Beach Bay, which, of course, is one of the larger inbound places for bringing in shipping containers from Asia. This is like one of the key places for dropping off stuff to go to market in the US from the Pacific Rim, and it is totally backed up. I saw a tweet earlier today, and I don't know if the number is quite on basis, but apparently 16% of all shipping containers in the world are stuck in this bay right now. And that includes like a lot of necessary parts for Bitcoin mining. So this kind of speaks to, in a visual sense, to the way that there's been a supply crunch all across the world on all markets. And it's been extending for almost 2 years now. I mean, we first saw these images in April 2020. Here we are coming up on April 2022 in 6 months or so. And we still have the same images in the same bay. So Vincent from Compass, I'm going to throw it to you. The supply chain issues run deep in every single market right now. How is it affecting the Bitcoin ASIC market in general, since we have all these different computer parts that are not necessary for ASICs? We have all these people demanding to buy ASICs to take advantage of the increased Bitcoin price right now.
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. I actually wanted to ask Vincent from MicroBT a question about this too. Like, so generally a lot of people think that I guess he dropped off for a little bit.
He'll be back.
But for us right now, like, we're seeing that I have a feeling that there's a higher bare minimum cost that the manufacturers are producing the ASICs at, just because one of the supply crunch of the wafers. Generally, the cryptocurrency industry consumes less than 1% of the overall capacity of the semiconductor companies like TSMC or Samsung. So we're not, in the grand scheme of things, we are not that big of a player compared to like the cars and Apple and everything. We're kind of getting, we get second tier treatment compared to them, just based on the number that they produce. So I think that there's an overall like higher bare minimum cost that the manufacturers are producing at, and that is getting passed on to the clients as well. So a lot of people think that producing is cheap. They aren't really realizing that all the parts and components of an ASIC are slowly increasing in price as well. And that brings me to a question that I wanted to ask Vincent from What's Miner. Generally, the price of ASIC materials remains relatively stable, even with when the Bitcoin price increases or decreases. But have you guys started to see an increase in the your cost to produce a machine based on the amount of like wafers that you guys are getting from the foundry? Obviously, if there's details you can't share, then don't worry about it.
Yeah. So. What we can see is in past 1.5 years, so everything become shortage. Okay, so no matter it is the ASIC chips, we take from foundry factory, or the chips for power supply unit, or the components for power supply unit and hash board and other parts. So what we can see is this of course have serious impact on the cost of the miner, okay, and the lead time of the miners, okay. Right now the situation is not only the cost increased, but also the lead time also becoming longer. So recently, you might have read the news that both TSMC and Samsung, okay, so increase the cost of the wafers. The reason they give is because right now the demand from various clients of the wafers of the chips are huge. Okay, for example, we are working with Samsung. Samsung normally they have clients like Qualcomm and Samsung Electronics and Nvidia. Okay, so because everyone wants to get more supply of the wafers, so for example, my actual requirement is 100, but I may put 120 or 150 to Samsung foundry factory, because I know that though I put 180 or something, so definitely my demand may be cut, so in some percentage. So to try to you know, get more wafer supply capacity from either TSMC or from Samsung. So the purchaser of the wafers may increase the demand from their from themselves. So which means you know, both Samsung and the TSMC may receive double of the real demand. So, you know, they try to increase the cost of the wafers to prevent you know, the purchaser of the wafer unnecessarily put more demand of the wafers. Okay, so this is the reason, you know, they give to us. Definitely, you know, you will understand that, you know, most for the ASIC hardwares, the most cost is from the chips. Okay, and also recently, some of the components, you know, which is very important for making the miners, also the cost increase a lot. Okay, so I just give you one example. Okay, so there is one chip, okay, so which is power management chips, okay, to making the power supply unit. Okay, earlier we can acquire these chips at you can say you know, $0.50. Okay, so now you are not able to get sufficient quantity even at you know, $5 per chip. So the cost increase, you know, 10 times. However, though it has a little impact on the cost, because this is not a major cost of the hardware. However, definitely the cost increase, and then the problem is the lead time is too long. Okay, so comparing with the previous situation, of course, this is the impact on the hardware side. And so for logistic also, we can see, you know, in last 1 month, so once in a year, and you know, the warehouse in United States or, you know, in different countries totally get congested, so there is no worker to palletize the cargos, and then, you know, the container cannot be returned back. And the flight, you cannot get sufficient space. So all this not only impact the cost of the wafers, but also the supply efficiency of the you know, of the hardware rigs. And of course, it also has a small impact due to COVID-19 situation in China and in the factory outside of China. For example, in past in the month of August, so Malaysia and Thailand factory almost closed because of COVID-19 situation becoming worse. So all these factors actually have the impact on the supply of the miners and the cost of the miners. Yeah.
There's a great question from Vincent, and great answer actually also from Vincent. But there's so many different factors that go into that. I guess a follow-up question to all of that is, like, how long do you foresee all of these different exogenous factors persisting and that lead to, you know, a 10x increase in price and these crazy long lead times, some of which you said is related to the COVID-19 situation, but also just other unrelated manufacturing and supply chain complications. Do you see this problem persisting maybe only for a year or two at most, or is it, you know, just the new state of the market when you're manufacturing Bitcoin ASICs? Back to you, Vincent, from What's Miner.
From the situation right now, we can see is that the situation may be becoming better from Q3 2022, because you know, earlier Samsung will give you the answer no, definitely no. Okay, so I do not have more supply capacity, but right now, what we can see is we might be able to get some more supply capacity in Q2 and Q4. However, and the answer is not solid right now. And so what we are expecting is maybe from Q4 2022 to to the year 2023. So the supply situation of the wafers and the chips shall be coming better.
Gotcha. That makes sense. It's a little ways off, but not too far. I kind of want to shift this exact same conversation into the accessibility and the price of manufacturing of hardware. With a slant towards retail or home miners or hosted miners. If Damien doesn't mind throwing up my screen one more time here, I'll share it for you. In the market multiple times over previous market cycles, we've seen sort of small gimmicky devices that try and make it easier for people to mine at home. This one you see here featured in a CNBC article with a variety of inputs there on some little plastic power strip is the latest version. We've also seen, companies like CoinMine try and offer products like this. Like, how viable long term or at all, are these types of hardware devices when you're looking at a market filled with like top tier leading hardware, like what's miners manufacturing? And will these ever have sort of any place in the hardware market, or are they, mostly cyclical gimmicks that catch headlines and maybe sell a few units, but don't really have any profitability or long-term lifespan? Curious to know both of your thoughts on these little devices we see popping up all the time. Vincent from What's Miner, I'll toss it back to you, and then Vincent from Compass, want to hear your thoughts too.
So what we can see is in the year 2017, 2018, so people can easily mine at home because, at that point of time, the power consumption of the miners is less than 2,000 watts, okay? And so because the power consumption of the miner is lower and so the current brought by the miners is not so high. So, however, since 2019, so almost all the miners switched to more than 3,000 watts. Okay, like our miners is 3,400, 500 watts. So based on the 220 volts power, so the currency of the miner goes to 16 ampere. So it is higher, than the staffs at home. Okay, appliance at home. So we can see that some investors or individuals, they have interest to invest because they might have some capital available, cash flow available. They just want to buy some miners and put it at home for mining Bitcoin. And so no matter this is interest or is kind of the investment, however, there are a lot of people, try to do that. So from our point of view, this will not, become the mainstream. Okay, so because right now you can see that, the mining facility data center are becoming bigger and bigger. So earlier, you hardly can see 100 megawatts mining farms. Okay, so right now you can see even 1 gigawatts mining data centers. Okay, so all those data centers are hosting the miners, most likely from the big investors. Okay, so this will consume, 99% or 95% at least the supply capacity from our site. So, sure. The strengths of our R&D will not be put to the 5% market. Okay. So, however, right now, what we are trying to do is, for mining business, most important factor is that the power cost should be lower, as much as possible. Okay, as lower as possible. What we are trying to look into is, okay, so how to reutilize the heat generated by the miners. So, if we can reuse those heat generated by the miners, which means, for example, if we can sell those heat at 80% of the power cost that we paid, okay, so which means you reduce the power cost to 20% right now you have. So that's why we are looking into those, those areas. So how we can reduce the operation cost of the investors as much as possible. So that's why we spend a lot of time and invested a lot so into water cooling miners and immersive mining miners. Okay, because by concentrating more hardwares together, so the heat generated by the miners may be reutilized in some of the cases. It will reduce the cost of the mining. Okay, so this is the area where we are trying to work. Okay, because what we can see, at least from my side, I can see that the power cost of individual at home, actually it is not competitive. Okay. This will demand, this will require, the individual investors always should upgrade their miners, with the latest power efficiency ones. So otherwise, it may not have the good profit level as they expected when the time goes. This is the share from my side. Yeah,
it's interesting to see all sorts of creative solutions that home miners try and make. And over the past year or two, or maybe a little bit more, we've seen, like you mentioned, across the board, a crazy push to expand immersion mining tools and heat reuse tools for all sorts of novel and creative use cases. Again, to sort of maximize the amount of utility we can get out of a mining operation and sort of trim costs as well. Vincent, same question to you. Like, what sort of utility or place in the market, if any, do these sort of, not to be too critical, but kind of gimmicky small machines have when people are trying to look for cheap, affordable ways to start mining?
Yeah, for sure. For me, I think that these smaller miners are, like, especially retail miners, they have to have they're not 100% profit driven. So a lot of them are, they need to find alternative use cases. So a lot of people will run a miner instead of running a heater. It's the same thing, a little bit louder, but you still can heat your entire floor. So by doing that, you kind of get two in one, and you're also mining some Bitcoin at the same time. And there's also people that are also like interested in doing lottery mining. Lottery mining is basically solo mining with like one machine, where you have like one in a million chance of getting it, but that's way better than winning. It's better odds than winning the lottery, at least, right? So there's people that will do that and run their machines at a loss. And then there's people that just want to support the network as well, right? So people that want to just support the network, run a machine and kind of like put their vote in, cast their vote in. And that's totally fine. There's not everything in the world is entirely profit driven. And then there's also use cases where, like, sometimes when people have a solar setup in their house, right? It does, the solar curve kind of goes up like this over time, where that peak happens in the middle of the day, and the middle of the day is when people aren't at home. And so what you can do is you can start utilizing miners to kind of use that power when it's like on, like peaked, when you're not using anything else. And so there are a lot of alternative uses for these kind of small gimmicky miners that allow retail to kind of keep themselves competitive. I think that's the best thing about retail miners, is that they can take advantage of these. Whereas for the large institutional players, it's a lot harder to kind of push that kind of stuff through, because there's a lot more lot more involved with regards to like the decision making and everything. For me, I think the simplest solution as like a retail investor, and I'm not trying to be a shill or anything, but it would be to purchase from Compass. The whole solution is very simple. Like, you don't have to invest in infrastructure, you don't have to invest in upgrading your electrical, and you don't have to deal with the heat, the noise, the screen. Like, it becomes a lot more simple like that. But there is definitely a larger subclass of people that want to like get their hands on a miner and get dirty with it and trying to find use cases for it. And I think there is a time and place, and everybody in retail has the opportunity to do that, especially right now when it's profitable for everybody. You can't guarantee that for the future, but it as long as you find an alternative use for it, it's doable.
Totally. So I want to move back to an earlier question or earlier thought that you had, Vincent from Compass. Damien, if you could share my screen really quickly. Looking at just like ASIC parts in general, interested in knowing your thoughts on the ASIC, like what parts of an ASIC are the most difficult to come by. So I'm not sure if you guys can see my screen currently, but you guys can't see my screen right now. But let me get a link over to Damon and he can throw this up. But basically, when you look inside an ASIC, there's a million different parts, right? And all those parts are kind of hard to come by. Some parts are harder than others. And I'm wondering, from your perspective in the procurement area, what parts inside an ASIC right now are so hard to come by that it might be causing a bottleneck? Like, we talk about the hash boards a lot and like the wafer chips. But there's other parts inside of an ASIC, like the PSU, even like going inside of that, there's different parts inside of that are difficult to come by. So Vincent from WhatsMiner, actually I'll start with you since you are on the more on the development side of these machines. But if you could scroll down maybe a little bit more, Damien, we could take a look at some of the parts inside of an ASIC. Vincent, I'll give you the floor.
Yeah. So I can see that.
Yeah. Do any of these, or is there any part inside an ASIC miner that is particularly tough to come by? Withstanding, of course, the hash boards themselves can be difficult to procure from chip manufacturers. Is there anything else others should be aware of, given that like there's a lot of demand right now to fix miners as well, and people are trying to find locations where they can be fixed?
Okay. So, this is a good question. Okay. So for the miners from our side, following parts can be used for all the miners. Okay, so like the fan is uniformed for all the miners. So you can there is difference for M30 series and M20 series. The fan had the difference is M20 series is 4-pin fans. And six pin fans, and now we are supplying the 4-pin fans. Okay, so in terms of all M30 series, okay, so it can be used the fan, and all the models are used the same fans, and the control card and adapter card can be uniformed. However. As you said, the hash board cannot be mixed with each other in case only when the hash board are being produced with the same bin of the chips. So for example, M30S Plus may be produced with bin 1, bin 2. Okay, so when the users want to replace the hash boards, or mix the hash board from different miners. So what he need to do is he need to make sure the model of the miners are same and the bin of those hash board are same. Okay, and so due to the hash board of the different miners may be different. Okay, because. So for example, okay, so some of the chips need to have 14 watts power to make them work. So if we put 12 watts power supply unit to on those miners, on those chips, it won't work. Okay, so right now the power models we have two types. One type is 12 watts and another type is 14 watts. Okay, you cannot mix use the 12 watts power supply unit to the miners need 14 watts power supply unit. Okay. So this is the difference. Why we cannot just make it simple? Just because the chips we can get, okay, they are not as beautiful as just like one. Okay, so different chips from the same wafer, okay. So they have different performance and characters. So we have to make the miners based on the research on the chips we can get. Yeah, so that's why all the miners they are different. Okay, only the same model of the miners, like so we have different version number for like people can see M30S Plus, but the M30S Plus maybe have version 1, version 2. Okay, so only version 1, the same version of the hardware. Okay, so they can mix with the hashboard. Okay, so even with the same model of the miners, still we need to check the hashboard, so whether they are from the same bin or not, from same bin of the chips. So we actually have the training and the documents to present that.
Awesome. Vincent, same question to you. Maybe like when you're looking at an ASIC and you're looking at the hardware market in North America, what are the hardest parts to come by currently inside an ASIC?
The good thing about brand new ASICs is they don't break that much, I hope. But we're like, it's really hard for us and a lot of people in the secondary markets to procure hash boards, control boards, and then just the general PSUs. So the PSUs are the biggest failure point, mainly for Bitmain units, less so on the micro BT units, thank God. It's hard now because for micro BT, there are Vincent said, there are multiple types of miners, right? And so each one, I think they had to create different power supplies for each different one. And so it's harder to mix and match and find the exact power supply that you need, especially because like some used to accept 277 volt and now they don't accept that anymore. And so those are the type of equipment that that's what I'm usually looking at. And for the older machines, it's much easier to zombify them. So like the S9s, you could interchange hash boards relatively simply. You can interchange every piece of equipment. Now it's becoming a lot harder to do that. And I'm not sure if that's from a manufacturer's like design point of view, or like they just want to limit it and reduce the amount of like interchanging and swapping of parts between miners.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Maybe.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Maybe Compass can become a spare parts center in North America. So you purchase some power supply unit, control car, and keep it there in North America.
Exactly.
Actually, right now we already have multiple services center in North America. So we have two services center in Canada, and so we should have two services center right now in North America, in United States also. One in Canada, so Bitfarms and Hard 8, they are our repair centers. And in United States, one is HM Tech. Okay, another, I do not remember the name, but they should have some small quantity of the spares available, but recently the demand of the spares become huge. So specifically for power supply unit and the control board.
Yeah. And I think that's also in part due to when you guys start dealing with more institutional clients, and a lot of what they're trying to do is they want to stock up on these parts and then have repair, like technicians on site that can quickly repair them, versus once the machine goes down, they order the part. And this is just so they can minimize the amount of downtime, because everybody wants to take advantage of like this period of extremely high profitability, and having even one machine down is a lot for even a couple of days, right?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Obviously, we can't make predictions necessarily too far into the future, but it's one of the most profitable times to be mining at all. That makes perfect sense. We know that miners are, you know, hoarding ASICs themselves, not only just spare parts, but it makes perfect sense to see the similar, to see the pattern repeat with spare parts. I kind of want to zoom out a little bit, though, because we've talked a lot about parts manufacturing and ASIC components and all of this. I want to talk about prices of ASICs a little bit. One of the more interesting relationships in my mind is sort of the, well, there's kind of two relationships, right, with prices. There's what we've talked about with supply and lead times and manufacturing and all the different price fluctuations for the components of an ASIC. But then obviously the ASIC is also heavily influenced by the price of Bitcoin itself and the cryptocurrency market. I'm wondering if both of you can sort of break down at a high level for us that relationship there in general, like how much of which factor more heavily influences ASIC prices, the components itself and the supply chain, maybe complications, or just the fluctuations of Bitcoin in the market, the cryptocurrency market. And maybe more specifically break down just a bit the relationship between Bitcoin, the asset, and Bitcoin ASICs, and how they fluctuate and move together or separately. Vincent from Compass, do you mind tackling that question first? Then we'll hand it to Vincent from What's Miner.
For sure. For me, I deal less with the supply chain, so I'll speak less to it. But generally, the correlation between ASIC price, like ASIC prices, and the underlying asset of Bitcoin is like 100% correlated. And this can be seen because manufacturers, just like What's Miner or Bitmain, they price the ROI of their machines based like they price their ASICs based on the ROI of the machines. And generally they take like a set power rate, they take the efficiency of the miner, and then they just extrapolate it and say, hey, let's make it so it's roughly a 300 to 360 day ROI. And that's how they've been pricing it since the very beginning. It's one of the only industries that kind of has this structure where the commodity, which is the ASIC, follows the price of the asset. And the reason that it's like this is because, I think it's one of the only industries that does this, because these are money printers. I think we've made reference to this multiple times. Every single day, they print the underlying asset and they produce like value. And so that's kind of why they need to be priced like this. And that's why I'd like to say that the correlation is almost 100% with regards to the Bitcoin price. You can see it right away. As soon as like Bitcoin prices go up, you'll see prices from manufacturers pricing less volatile, but you can see it even on Bitmain website, right? They had an ASIC on there, the S19J Pro, for I think more than $10,000. But as soon as Bitcoin dropped to 42,000, that price dropped to 9,300. And it usually the price, the drop in the price of ASICs does not fall right away. But I think people are starting to see supply start to pick up again. There's a period of time between August and October where it was starting to get a little bit iffy, but now October batch is coming up, and so many more miners are selling their futures and selling some stock.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I watch it somewhat closely, but you definitely see significant movements in ASIC prices, both up and down over the past year, sort of very closely tied to Bitcoin's price. Vincent from What's Miner, same question to you. Like from the manufacturing side, I guess there's kind of a couple facets to this question. Like, what do you think more directly affects the price of the machine? You know, the prices for the actual components of it, or the market price for Bitcoin itself? And how do you see those two things, or how have you seen those two things sort of affect the price of these machines?
Yeah, so we have to say both have the impact. Okay, so what we can see is that, so in case the mining profit is not so worse, not so bad. So the price of the miners most likely impacted by the Bitcoin price and network difficulties. So basically, it is related with mining profit per terahash per day into 24 hours. It has serious impact on the price of the miners in case, the mining profit is not break through the hardware cost of my miners. Okay, so in that case, for example, if we base on the RI period of the hardware, for example, M31 S Plus, we normally take 330 days or 300 days as the RI period, and so in case the mining profit goes to 10 cents, okay, or even less than that, okay, so then the miner price in stock may be lower than the hardware cost. So in that case, we need to consider whether we sell those hardwares in profit loss, or we will just sell at minimum the hardware cost. Okay, so in case the mining profit is at the normal level, okay, so then the price will be based on most likely the mining profit per terahash per day, like that. Okay, and of course, when we the price of the miners, you can see that the price are different for the miners available immediately and the miners you pre-order. Okay, so normally the pre-order price is cheaper than the price you get immediately. Okay, what I can see is in past 3 years, when I get into this industry, so the pricing of the miners, the principle not changed so much. So we normally price the miners based on the RI period of the miners. However, the sales policy now becoming more, at least from our side, it is becoming more visible and more predictable from our side. So, for example, for the contract we signed with the big players. So right now we split it into two parts. One part is we have fixed price with them, and another part is we have a floating price with the purchaser, and for the floating price, we will set up the minimum price and the maximum price. Okay, so the final consolidated price will be between the minimum price and the maximum price. So we also have a clear formula how to calculate the price, which should be consolidated based on the mining profit, 1 terahash per 24 hours. So now it has become more visible and more transparent to the purchaser.
Totally. Thanks for that answer. So we're coming up to the top of the hour. We're going to close out the stream here in a second, but I do want to get one more question in while I can. I've seen a lot of comments from retail participants that Bitcoin ASIC prices are just too high and they're classing people out. But I think that there is a misunderstanding here when it in terms of profitability and ROI potential for mining yourself, especially if you're mining from home and you're looking at like 10 cent plus per kilowatt hour, would you be able to mine from home successfully, ROI in your machine in say a year to 18 months and then stack sats going on from there? So Vincent from Compass, I want to start with you, and then Vincent from Wetzmeyer, want to get your guys' like 60 second take down on that topic. Does it make sense for retail miners to invest in an ASIC if they have the correct setup?
For me, I believe that it is a good opportunity to buy an ASIC and also get an ROI. The main thing is like when when people are producing these ASICs, just like Vincent or MicroBT, they're looking at it with a power price of 6 cents, 7 cents. And so while it is a good opportunity if you want to like test it out, but I'd say the best strategy is to kind of co-locate your machines, just because the industry is becoming more industrialized. Unless you have like excess powers or really low power rates, I wouldn't recommend running it at home. It is a fire hazard and a risk, but yeah.
One follow-up really quick. In terms of like purchasing the hardware, I think some people take out loans and they become over leveraged on it. Is that a concern that you've seen through this bull cycle for retail specifically?
Not for retail. I think that retail is fine. I think the biggest risk I see is that a lot of public companies are taking a lot of financing out for this equipment to try and buy as much as possible, just because having hardware on your balance sheet makes you look like you get extremely high multiples for it. I think that is one thing that we need to be cautious of as an oversupply of hardware to these public companies. For retail, not so much.
It's definitely an interesting thread to pull on. Wish we had more time to get to that subject, but maybe we got you in house, so we'll get you another time. Vincent from What's Miner, we'll finish with you on the same question. For retail players getting to the game, maybe they want to put an M30 on their shelf in their garage. Is that still a profitable endeavor for them to undertake?
Actually from my side, so what I would like to suggest is, you know, for individual investors, okay, so in case they have cash flow to pay for power bills, okay, so I think no matter when it is the time, okay, so they can just buy the miners and then start mining. And so don't think, you know, too much, okay, so whether this miner are profitable or not. So, you know, sometimes it is profitable and sometimes it may not, you know, be so profitable. So, however, in case the investors has some cash flow to pay power bills every month, so it will just like, you know, every month or every day, so he purchased the Bitcoin at some average price. Okay. So if they can hold those Bitcoin as long as they can go, and, you know, so finally they are profitable. So what I can see is, you know, the investors, you know, partnership with us in the year 2019 or in the year 2020. So in case they hold those Bitcoin as long as they can and sell at the peak price, you know, none of them are suffering loss any money. Yeah. So this is the suggest. Okay, so the most important thing is not only have the capital or cash flow to buy the miners hardware, but also you need to have the cash flow to pay for those power bills. Okay, so in that case, you know, this is a definitely profitable business.
100% agree on that. And something else I wanted to interject is, you're right about the power bills. If you set up your mining facility correctly and you have a 1 year buffer for your power rates, you can withstand any like down cycles and not have to sell your Bitcoin. That is the best strategy to have, and I recommend that to everybody. But something to note is like Bitcoin mining as an investment is a really good thing, just because there are other like tax advantages you can take of, like if you are to purchase a miner, depreciate it and all that stuff compared to, and then you treat it as income, right? Versus if you were to buy the Bitcoin, which is the underlying asset, and then just hold it, sell it for capital gains. And so a lot of people like need to understand that these aren't like one-to-one. There are a lot of strategies that you can implement and kind of make this more worthwhile. And for me personally, I see it like Bitcoin mining is way better than buying Bitcoin itself, just because of all these tax advantages and different strategies that you can have. That's a totally different subject, but that's something else I think that a lot of people are debating on all the time.
Yeah, no, it's a perfect, kind of a perfect shill and note to wrap up on. We just had an amazing live stream 2 weeks ago, I guess, on mining taxes and tax strategies. all our viewers should definitely go check that out. It's on our YouTube channel. All sorts of advice on different ways to structure your mining operation, write-offs and deductions available to miners, all those different strategies, because in many ways they do make mining way more attractive than just, you know, sort of buying Bitcoin on Coinbase or Cash App or something like that. And a lot more fun along the way. To both of you, Vincent, this has been a ton of fun, like educational for me based on the comments in the chat and on Twitter. Our viewers loved it as well. I can't thank you both enough for your time. It's been super enjoyable chatting with both of you. Really appreciate it. For everyone viewing, be sure to subscribe and like the video, subscribe to the channel. We're back every week, Wednesdays and Fridays, with live streams like this about Bitcoin and proof of work mining. We'll be back Friday talking about the finances of mining. But that's a wrap for today on the ins and outs of the ASIC market. Again, Vincent from What's Miner and Vincent from Compass, thank you both for your time. This has been a great chat.